Welcome to the Parle podcast of the Hindu. I have with me K. Sujata Rao, former Union Health Secretary, who has worked on non-communicable diseases and introducing vaccines in public health. She is the author of the book, Do We Care? On India's Health System. Also joining us is K.M. Gopakumar, who has been the legal advisor and senior researcher with the Third World Network, New Delhi. He works on the global intellectual property regime and its impact on developing countries. So could I start off by asking you sequentially, now that the central government has shifted, the responsibility for vaccination largely to the states and to do their own procurement and also allowed market fixed prices. So how do we view against the task of vaccinating all Indians, during the current year and with this rising number of cases, what is your view of, the impact of this policy that we are pursuing now? Dr. Sujata, please start off.
Well, if you see the population, we need to vaccinate overall, say I'm taking round figures, not actuals, about say 950 million people who are above 18. And of that, about 400-500 they're equally spread. About 500 are in the plus 45, another 500 are in the plus 18 to 45. So right now, and together we need about 1.5 billion doses. Right now, the production is what? About 60 million doses per day, per month. And we already have about 358 million people who have yet to be vaccinated in the above 45 years age group. So the government of India is committed to providing free vaccine for all above 45. And for that, they need about 700 million doses to complete that target. So at this rate, it will take them very, very long, even if they earmark 30 million doses per month for that requirement. So actually speaking, there is really not much of a vaccine to go around. And therefore, unless and until, they've been very impractical in just taking only 50% of the vaccine. They need to have taken the whole production and finish the target group that they had set out to do. Because this is going to cause quite a lot of delay, and unless and until production is stepped up. Now, these two companies are saying from July onwards, they'll be able to produce 112 million doses or 115 million doses per month. With that, it might get a bit easier. Even then, it will take government of India almost 6 to 8 months to finish the target group at the rate of 2 doses for each. And so really speaking, what they're doing is they're focusing on the target group they had identified, which has an epidemiological and scientific basis, as opposed to the current demand to say you please also include the younger persons above 18 to 45 years. Now, there is a need for that urgency also, mainly because we find that almost 45% of the deaths are in this age group of 20 to 50. And so what the government of India is trying to do is saying, okay, keep it at market prices. And the market prices being quite high, the state governments may not be able to afford buying and supplying free, or only the richer sections among this age group will be able to, whoever can afford the private prices, will be able to get themselves vaccinated. So it is some kind of market segmentation and fragmentation of the market that they're trying to do in order to get the supply and demand in sync at some level.
Okay. Mr. Gopakumar?
So I think the important objective in the policy is that to accelerate the vaccination. But the way in which the new policy is designed, I am afraid we may not achieve that acceleration precisely because of its fragments the market. So now the market is divided into 3 broad categories and a differential pricing. So this is going to hamper hamper the bulk procurement and making it available at an affordable price. So that's the first factor which is going to slow down the acceleration of vaccination. Second, once it is open for the states to compete now to get the vaccine, and as already we know that there is a limited supply. So therefore, the states, earlier there was only one single procurement agency, that's the central government. Now you have, in that place, now there are 28 states are going to compete with the along with the private hospitals to for the procurement of vaccine. So all this will have implications on the acceleration of the vaccine targets. So I am afraid that we may not, the policy, instead of accelerating the vaccination, it may slow down further.
So I wanted to ask you, based on all your long expertise, how does the, from a public health approach, how does the current vaccine policy, how can you view it against all the vaccination campaigns that have been done in India before, whether it's polio or, whether it's the other vaccines? What kind of comparison can we draw? I mean, we now find that, there seems to be some kind of a new model in the way that they're approaching vaccination.
See, I think they haven't thought through this whole vaccine policy. They didn't at all think about supply when they kept on giving themselves the target for free vaccination. And as you can see, the eligibility criteria has been increasing steadily. First, they started with all the healthcare providers. Then they said the healthcare workers. Then after that, they said all elderly populations above 65. Then they said those who are with comorbidities above 45. So, they kept on expanding the eligibility criteria of on basis of risk, which is a good thing, which is not bad, but they never kept an eye on the supply. What is the potential available to supply this emerging demand? And I think they were not expecting this wave two, and the anxieties that wave two has therefore created and triggered a huge demand for vaccines. Because initially, during the lull period from October to March, there was really, hardly 16 deaths or whatever. It was very, the pandemic was kind of seemed to be petering out. There was a sense of comfort, and there was this vaccine hesitancy, largely not only because of the confusion of the nature of the vaccines that we have, but largely also feeling that the pandemic is out of its way, out on its way, and therefore there's no need to take a vaccine. We've seen this phenomena under H1N1 in 2010, when we did provide the vaccines, but by that time H1N1 had petered out and we could not get even the healthcare providers to take that vaccine. So keeping this in mind, they also felt that, it could be vaccine hesitancy being what it is. There's not going to be much of a demand. So they were cautious and not doing advance purchase agreements, nor were they stockpiling. And they thought that these two indigenous companies would be adequate, their production level would be adequate to meet the steady demand, which will grow steadily, and by the year end, they'll be able to cover everyone. But they never realized that there would be this kind of a wave two, which literally triggered a huge demand that they're now today not able to face, and they're not prepared for. So that's the reason why the window they lost in sorting out the vaccine supply position, in giving them the capital investment required by these companies to expand their production base, or in trying to see that other companies also got this know-how and they also got into the production line, or having advanced purchase agreements with the imported vaccine companies and so on. So none of these arrangements were made. And I think that partly this sense of comfort came in the backdrop of feeling that the pandemic is on its way out. There's a vaccine hesitancy, and so there's no real need to, no urgency to do any stockpiling. So this is, we've missed an opportunity, and now we are in a real bind.
So did we also confine ourselves to too few vaccines?
Yes. We did. That I believe that because Pfizer did come in February and did offer to enter the market, but then they were told to do a bridging study, which now they have relaxed, the government has relaxed. They were not willing to do that. They're never willing to do that. They were not willing to do this even H1N1 because they said, we've got all approvals. You see, they don't really care for the Indian market because they already have whatever they're producing being bought in the Western markets at a huge price of $20 a shot. So they know that their vaccine is affordable only to a small segment of India's population. But nevertheless, even that we could have tied up, which we didn't realize the need for. And as I said, there were several other policy options we had, which we didn't explore, because we really did think that these two companies would be adequate. That's what I feel might have been the reason for this unpreparedness of availability of vaccines today, and absolutely no stockpiling. Why the 66 million doses were exported, I don't think they had a thinking that there would be such a demand so fast. And they got into that vaccine Maitri program, which they must be regretting now, but whatever.
Mr. Gopakumar, would you like to talk about vaccine, public-funded, vaccine research, and what? I mean, there's lots of discussion about that. I mean, even the AstraZeneca vaccine, for instance, one of the recent reports in The Guardian says that it's 97% funded by public and charitable sources. And yet we have, for one thing, we have differential pricing. And another thing is that, it's not open sourced. So do you have any comments on the way public-funded vaccine research has finally been, in some sense, commercialized?
Yes, absolutely. During the peak of TRIPS and access to medicine debate in the early 2000, we were told that, the main justification for intellectual property protection is because it's a mechanism to recoup the R&D investment. So if there is a public investment in the R&D, then you can separate the cost of R&D from the cost of the or price of the product. So that way you can make the innovation happen as well as ensure access. But in the case of COVID, it's all funded by $93 billion. As per the one calculation, around $93 billion were spent by the various governments for vaccine research. And all these vaccines, whether it's Moderna, it's 100% publicly funded. AstraZeneca, around 97%. Pfizer's vaccine, though Pfizer denies that it does not receive any public funding, but the innovator company, the BioNTech, got huge public funding from the German government. And also Pfizer also got around $2 billion as part of the advanced market commitment. So all these companies received the public funding. And after receiving the public funding, there was a complete de-risking of R&D as well as manufacturing happened. But now they are not ready to give up the monopoly. They still control the both the technology and preventing the scaling up of the production. If you need to scale, it's very clear you need to scale up the production. All these companies are not in a position to meet the global demand, so you have to scale up the production. So for that you need to share the technology. They are not ready to do that. Even the developed countries are preventing it. But we do have to take a lesson that the Serum Institute, which has received the technology free of cost from AstraZeneca, and which also received funding from foundations like Gates Foundation for expand its manufacturing capability, but still Now indulging in differential pricing and charging a huge money which is disproportionate to their expenditure or investment which they put for the manufacturing of vaccine. So it's an eye-opener. So the problem is that, the monopoly and profit, not actually the, the idea of recouping of your R&D investment. And we should treat vaccine as a public good because there is a huge public spending on these products.
So, Dr. Rao, actually, is there any precedent for the present policy of states acquiring their own vaccine and then differential pricing for private sector? You have a long experience with the vaccines.
No, never. Not the government of India has had a universal immunization program starting from the 60s, picking up traction during Rajiv Gandhi's time in the 80s. And it really became a very global priority from 91-92 with the World WHO piloting it, and particularly the entry of polio pulse program for eradication of polio from 1995. So in all these programs where immunization was being done by the government, vaccine preventable diseases, those days it was six. Now steadily we give 14 vaccines under this program. And here it is completely centrally procured. And that's a conscious decision, because when you do central procurement as a single buyer, you have the advantage of market power and you can beat down the prices. So you get really rock bottom prices. Hepatitis B used to cost 750 rupees in the open market per dose. When Government of India entered it, it came down to less than 200 and then later on crashed further to less than 100. Similarly, with all other vaccines, we'd see the same trend. So and this has been the experience even with drugs, because we're a huge market. So when you fragment the market and you allow him to set the price, you're literally giving away all your advantages to the pharma companies to make their so-called super profits. There is no other economic rationale why you're fragmenting the market. Now, in this context, I would just like to say one more point, and that is that the Government of India has a constitutional obligation to stop the interstate transfer of infectious diseases jumping from one state to another. This obligation falls under the concurrent list. And the state governments, no doubt, under the state list, are responsible for public health. And that's why they're running around oxygen and bags and gloves and doctors and hospital beds and so on and so forth. So under this arrangement, because it's a concurrent list, right from the beginning, the central government has, under all infectious diseases, malaria, TB, leprosy, HIV, all infectious diseases, there have been national programs under which the Government of India has procured and supplied to the states vaccines, consumables, drugs, essential drugs, and so on, at very low prices because of the market power that they were able to get. And the state governments would implement. Why the Government of India is giving up that advantage today? Can you imagine if the Government of India issued a tender asking for 1.2 or 1.3 billion doses, how the prices would crash and how many of the Pfizers and Modernas would immediately rush in? How many Americas they have to vaccinate to get this one single order? Now, why we are not able to get a large number of suppliers to provide immediately, concurrently, by fixing a base price based on the lowest that we get in the tenders. There's so many strategies. I mean, I can spell them out. And quickly achieve our target beats me. I really don't understand what the compelling factors are for Government of India to be giving up that advantage. It's a 60,000 crore market. 35,000 crores was already provided for in the budget. And if it is a question of financing, they could always make this, because I understand the other vaccines are childhood vaccines and it's a limited market of, say, 30 million doses. And this is much, much, much larger. So you can have a financing arrangement with the states, like a centrally sponsored scheme, where the state shares 30 or 40% of the total cost, and the central government puts in 60 or 70% of the total cost, as opposed to 100% before. That is understandable. But the procurement should be one, so that you get a really good price. That I'm not able to understand.
So I'd like to go back to this intellectual property rights question. So the economists, like even recently, some of the international economists have said that intellectual property rights were never designed for use during a pandemic. And therefore, what is happening now is a little incongruent. So what avenues do people have to use the existing framework of laws and conventions to see that actually this IP rights is, they are thrown open and more vaccines are produced, and in fact there's a call for a people's vaccine. So do you have any comments on that aspect, intellectual property rights and a people's vaccine?
I think when we look at vaccines, there are two types of intellectual property rights have been used to control the competition. One is patent and another is the trade secret. As far as patent is concerned, the government can issue a compulsory license and create a freedom of operation for any potential manufacturers to produce. But there is a regulatory system which act as an enforcement agency for the trade secret protection. As a result, even though you have a compulsory license, it would be difficult to produce the vaccine by a non-originator company very quickly. I'll just tell you the example. If you produce a small molecule, that regulatory agencies never look at what kind of manufacturing process is followed to produce that generic version of that small molecule, like a paracetamol. They will look at what end of the day is a produced by the non-originator company or a generic company, is the paracetamol or not. If it's a paracetamol, that company get a marketing approval. But in the case of vaccine, the regulatory agency insists that the non-originator company is following the manufacturing process of the originator. But the manufacturing process of the originator is not in the public domain. It is kept as a trade secret. So we do not have a compulsory licensing mechanism or anything to reveal that information to the potential non-originator companies. The only agency which can do such kind of sharing of that information with the regulatory agencies, potential manufacturer, is the regulatory agencies. But regulatory agencies also treat this dossier submitted by the originator companies as a trade secret. So therefore, India and South Africa approached the WTO asking that you give us the right to waive the protection and enforcement of certain intellectual property rights in the context of COVID medical products. So that waiver, if adopted, can be used by the regulatory agencies to share the dossiers to the potential manufacturers, and you can speed up the production. So basically, a potential manufacturer right now, existing in countries like India or even China or in Brazil, has the technological capability to replicate the technology without the help of the originator. But the regulatory framework insists that if you are replicating the technology without the help of the originator, then you have a burden to prove safety and efficacy. That means you have to carry out the clinical trials. So that is resource as well as time consuming. So that can slow down the production of this vaccine by a non-originator company. So we need to do two-pronged actions. One is the regulatory agencies should waive the clinical trial requirements by developing an accelerated pathway for the non-originator companies. And second, national regulatory agencies should share the originator's dossier with the potential manufacturer. So while doing these two actions, you can create an enabling environment for many of the vaccine manufacturers to enter into the market without the help of the originator company. That is what we should do.
Dr. Rao, you have
something? So it's a little, as Gopa has said, it's really quite complicated, because even during H1N1, though the seed had come from Indonesia, WHO was trying to make a universal availability of the processes and so on. Pfizer still had a control and were not willing to share. And there was some kind of a problem in trying to get the technology transfer. In vaccines, as he has said, it is a bit complex. But nevertheless, having done that, there are means available. And if US does support India and South Africa, it is possible to find ways and means of making this into a public good and have countries to take up this manufacture of these vaccines. Largely because right now the vaccine inequity is unjustifiable. 70-80% is with the developed countries of whatever vaccines that are available. Maybe about 17, I mean about maybe 10, 17 or 19% is with the middle income countries, whereas the low income countries have virtually nothing. So therefore, I think this will be issue of concern in the coming days, because there is now a clamor for vaccines to be distributed equitably. Though Gavi did set up a mechanism under COVAX, India turned out to be the biggest supplier. There were not many countries willing to supply. And India Serum is the one that gave 38 million doses, which they then distributed, out of which again India got about 10 or 15 million doses from COVAX. So these kind of international arrangements have to be done. Having said that, in India itself, we do have Covaxin produced by Bharat Biotech, where ICMR has been a very active partner, a knowledge partner in the process. So I really don't know who holds the patent here. And I suspect that ICMR must be a joint patent holder for sure, and they should be able to leverage that advantage to take it round and get other companies. We have about 20 manufacturing companies in the country. And depending on the state of technology, the state of readiness, the ramping up of the production of Covaxin at least can be done, which I think is going to be much more robust as a gut feeling to compare to Covishield. It certainly is efficacy 78% as compared to 63% of Covishield. And so we should put our bet on this Covaxin, but it's also wrapped up in confidence that I don't know who is the patent holder. That said, you know, if Bharat Biotech, which Mr. Ella Rao was on TV saying he has so far incurred an expenditure of 350 crores, well, certainly some part of the product can be given to him and royalty be paid to, not royalty, but some amount of compensation money can certainly be given to him for compensating the investments that he might have made. And the rest of it, because ICMR is an active partner, they should be able to make this available to other companies to quickly manufacture, instead of Bharat Biotech getting into individual bilateral contracts with the manufacturing companies and producing doses for India's market and pricing it so ridiculously high. So I think there's a lot of scope available, provided the government of India is genuinely interested in ensuring universal vaccination at the least cost to itself.
So if, may I add something?
Please.
I fully agree with what has been said right now. Now what is happening here is a duopoly vaccine market. We need to introduce competition in the market by allowing more companies to come in. None of these companies can meet the demand. There is a huge gap. These two companies cannot meet that demand right now. So therefore, it is important to allow more companies to produce this medicine. Government has announced that they have reached some arrangement with the three public sector units to produce Bharat Biotech vaccine, but that's not enough. There are companies with huge capabilities, especially in the private sector. Government should step in and allow much more open licensing of Bharat Biotech vaccine, because this vaccine is a domestically developed vaccine, and government also has a stake in that vaccine. And the innovator, that's Bharat Biotech, can be, nobody is saying that they should not be compensated. With a fair competition, compensation should be provided, and this technology should be shared in fair and equitable manner. And to scale up the production. So this is the need of the hour. Okay, we should not hesitate to do that. And we should stop this vaccine duopoly in the market. Further, there are around 7 companies obtained contract manufacturing license from Sputnik to produce. I think this production also to be facilitated at the earliest. Of course, again, here comes the regulatory burden of carrying out bridging studies, etc. But there are 7 companies. The regulatory agencies should speed up their regulatory requirements and even wave off looking at the data, and then they should encourage these companies to you know, not encouragement, but a facilitation of the production at the earliest.
So actually, if you take the WHO's process, there are several vaccines that have been submitted to WHO. And it's possible that there might be, you know, developers who don't want royalty on their vaccine and they're willing to open source it. And potentially this might be approved by, you know, WHO. So in that circumstance, should the government of India then be open to receiving that and producing it here so that it can be distributed far more widely? Because I imagine that you would want to have more vaccines as you will have to have repeated vaccinations in the future, which also involves you know, cost for everybody, the individual and for the government.
Yeah, the WHO system of pre-qualification now in the days of pandemic, it is called emergency use listing. These are very, very cumbersome procedure. And it is taking time. And we can see that, you know, till now, only three vaccines have been pre-qualified or emergency use listing mechanism approved, only three vaccines. So this is very time consuming, and only companies with certain technological and financial capabilities can meet that requirement. But, you know, the need of the hour is, you know, to produce at the earliest, and countries are entering into bilateral contracts to buy these vaccines from you know, various countries wherever it is available. So I think India's regulatory agencies and Indian companies who are capable of producing a quality vaccine. So therefore, it will not be a problem for them to produce and even to sell to countries at an affordable price to facilitate the global vaccination program. Because if a part of the population is left globally without access to vaccine, our efforts to vaccine our own population will not will not result in that the required result, because we will be in danger if nobody is safe until everyone is safe.
So Dr. Rao,
no, having said that, you know, WHO may be having some candidate vaccines, but, you know, there's no harmonization of regulatory mechanisms in the world. Right now, when the government of India has liberalized and said even foreign vaccines can come provided they have an FDA approval, these vaccines that WHO is certifying will need to have some kind of a stringent regulatory regulator having cleared it. Because the WHO's own pre-authorization processes are pretty time-consuming, so they won't be able to clear them in the conventional, traditional sense of the term. So in such a situation, even after some trials, quick trials they have done and they certified that this is good, safe and efficacious, Government of India, in the absence of any other regulator having looked at it, may ask for bridging trials to be done. So, in which case that process they might insist upon. But all said and done, as Gopa has said, it is time consuming. But I personally feel that today we should be as open as possible. And as long as efficacy, safety is ensured, we should go for it. Because really, we are talking today, right now in this discussion, we are only looking at domestic demand. You forget that we also have an obligation to provide these vaccines to COVAX, which is a responsibility that we cannot renege on. The serum vaccine itself, serum company, SII, has already taken an advance of $300 million from Gavi and Gates Foundation to supply 200 million, 600 million worth of vaccines. That's $200 million, at 200 million vaccines at $3 each. And for that, they've already taken an advance of 300. So they have to provide those doses to them. Already a legal notice has been given by AstraZeneca. So it's a very, very tight situation today. And to get out of this mess that we're seeing in wave two, we have to talk about 70% of our population being vaccinated. That's the only way out, it seems to me. I'm no great scientist or epidemiologist, but what little I know, I think unless and until we have vaccinated 70%, and that's why the figure of 974 million doses comes in, people come in. So that constitutes the 70%. So, you know, unless and until we reach that target, it's going to be difficult. So I don't think these two companies can do very much. And Government of India has to think smart, think fast, and think very quickly and take very quick decisions, because they lost a little luxury of the little window that they had. So now they really got to work double speed.
So I'd like to actually conclude by asking, should the present vaccine pricing policy be reviewed?
I strongly say yes. There's no justification whatsoever for the kind of prices that both Dr. Poonawalla and Dr. Ella Rao have given. Their excuse is, Mr. Poonawalla says, I need the super profits to reinvest again. We have to remember that he's got gap funding from WHO for stimulating his vaccine production capability during the 2 years, 2017 to now. He's got $600 million market from Gavi, of which he's already received $300 million in cash. What is he doing for the last 6 months? Where has he used it? We don't know. Plus, the Government of India is giving him 3,000 crores. Again, we don't know when he will put action on that. And with all this money, he's only promising a doubling of 50 million doses to 100 million doses in the next 2 months. When people tell me that 1,500 crores can get you 100 million doses capacity. So really, he has enough money, and there was no need at all for pricing the product to make super profits at this time when we are in such a bad shape. And where Dr. Ella Rao is concerned, if he says he got preferential treatment in getting all the raw materials and everything from NIV Pune, ICMR, Picton, his phase 3 trial would never, never have been possible but for ICMR backing him up in such a short time. Both these companies were given huge relaxations of emergency authorization, even without the full submission of data. So to begin with, they have to get a full license. Now it's 3 months over since they got that emergency authorization. They must get a proper license as per the law to be able to market commercial marketing of the vaccines. Now, you know, if Government of India is going to bend even on that rule, it's a very huge concession. What if they spend the money on for them to be wanting more money? And Dr. Ella Rao says, I'm a justification for the high prices. He wants that money to reinvest again in expanding his. But already Government of India is giving him 1,500 crores. So I think, you know, there is an element of greed that has got in. And I feel sorry, because this is not the moment when these companies should be thinking of profiteering. This is the Cipla moment. This is as bad as it was in 2000 when multinational companies were charging $12,000 for HIV drugs. And millions were dying for want of treatment. And that moment is the moment when Cipla came forward and produced drugs for $300. That action was so disruptive that the market just crashed. And India was able to finally produce these drugs for less than $140 per head, which enabled at least 45 countries' people lived. Millions of people's lives were saved. This is that moment, not to be thinking of making super profits to buy a flat in France.
Mr. Gopakumar?
Yeah, it is unfortunate that, you know, Indian companies like Serum Institute and Bharat Biotech is speaking the same language like big companies. Reinvestment, recouping of investment, etc. is the language which we are familiar, and we have been hearing this from the big pharma. But the business model of companies from developing countries was always making profit on a volume and selling at a lower price. Even the huge beneficiary of this arrangement is Serum Institute. When they sold the meningitis vaccine for 40 cents to WHO or to Gavi to distribute in the African meningitis belt. And the same companies are now talking about a differential pricing and reinvestment. This is quite unfortunate. And especially Serum Institute, which has not spent a single money either for R&D of this vaccine or even for manufacturing. They got all the money from various agencies, and it should be treated as a public good. And as far as Bharat Biotech, it's a also use the facilities of Government of India, and there should be transparency with regard to the R&D expenditure. And based on that, nobody is saying that they should they should not be compensated. There can be arrangements for fair compensation, but they should not hold their cost for profit, and it should not hold the people's life on edges. So that is the that is what's the need of the hour. And end of the day, the government has the constitutional responsibility. Okay, companies may tell whatever they want to tell, but the Government of India has the constitutional obligation to protect people's health under Article 21 of the Constitution, and they should rise to the occasion and fulfill their Raj Dharma.
So that's been a most useful and interesting discussion, with a lot of light thrown on what choices we have on the vaccine front and public funded vaccine research. Thank you very much for agreeing at short notice to join me and setting aside time. Thank you very much once again.
Thank you.